Greetings, film freaks. We are the Podcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema. Season 2.
What's poppin', people? Welcome to the Podcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in your ear holes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
These boys came up to us and they went, "Ugh, what's wrong with your face?"
On today's episode, we will be talking about The Killer. This is a 2023 film directed by David Fincher and stars Michael Fassbender, Tilda Swinton and Charles Parnell. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows. After a fateful near miss, an assassin battles his employers and himself on an international manhunt he insists isn't personal. Here is an original song to support the synopsis.
Solitary and cold, unencumbered by regret, a killer waits in shadows again.
Stick to your plan. Anticipate. Don't improvise. Trust no one. Never yield an advantage. Fight only the battle you're paid to fight. Forbid empathy. Empathy is weakness. Weakness is vulnerability.
He was the camel of the German tourist. He kills to the Smith's greatest hits.
Let's start with some facts about the film. Michael Fassbender does not blink on screen to make his character seem void of emotion.
I didn't notice.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah, you can.
I've got some beef with this fact.
Ooh.
Because I read this fact. Do you know what I did next?
Get some dripping?
No, what?
Beef dripping.
Oh, no. I then watched it again and I was on a mad hunt for blinks.
To then what? To then go online and just shit on it?
Well, you know that DiCaprio where he clips and points at the screen?
Yeah.
I sat there and did it every time he blinked. And I can now tell you with 100% accuracy...
How many?
He does blink throughout the film.
Did you count?
Several times. But credit where credit's due, he only blinks when he's having a bit of a wobble. Because the whole film's focused on an assassin losing his edge, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So you only see him blink when he's having a bit of a tormented battle in his head where he's going against his mantra, his way of doing things. So he only blinks when he's like, when emotion creeps in, when he sees his injured partner in hospital, he does a little blink there. I mean, fair play
to
him.
His tell.
Yes, exactly.
Like in poker.
I mean, fair play to the man. He does spend most of the film not blinking. But don't give me a fact that he says he doesn't blink at all, because I have spotted several blinks.
So he didn't. Not like the sea curse in Lighthouse of Defoe, where he doesn't blink.
Does he not blink at all?
He don't blink at all in that speech, in that monologue.
Really?
It's insane.
I want to watch that now. I never thought I'd enjoy myself watching if an actor blinks or not, but I had a great time.
Yeah.
I am someone who I feel I don't blink much because I'm kind of robotic. I'm pretty intense.
Well, you did it with Let the Right One In. Didn't you go back, rewatch and listen for sausage sounds?
I did, yeah.
The eating of, the popping of a good sausage.
Yeah, I have a very sad existence where I will go and rewatch a film to debunk a fact.
I like facts like that, though.
Yeah.
I enjoy them. And I'm glad you've proven that he did blink.
Yes, several times as well.
Yep.
Still impressive, though.
Yep.
The graphic novel, The Killer, written by Alexis Nolent, illustrated by Luke Jacquemont, has been a passion project for David Fincher for nearly 20 years.
That's cool.
Would you be interested to read that graphic novel?
Yeah, definitely.
It feels to me that anything that Fincher puts his hands on, it feels like it's a passion project.
Well, I love it when a director unashamedly has influences and he wants to put them influences into his own film or a film. So the fact that a graphic novel just sort of spurred his interest does wonders for the graphic novel, but it also is like... you know where this idea has come from. You know, it's not just this lunchbox film that's copy pasted from other films.
Yeah.
He's thought, like, I really would love to see it in this sort of light, or, you know, in a real live action movie.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. I would be interested in seeing that, reading that graphic novel, especially if it's as clinical and as clean as this.
I'd also love to see this as kind of like an animated series done in the style of the graphic novel. So I watched that.
Blue Samurai.
Yeah, The Blue-Eyed Samurai recently.
So good.
On Netflix. And I would love to see this sort of story given a similar sort of feel, a similar vibe, because I'd love to see that illustrated on screen, because I think that would be really interesting as well. This is a really muted film, and it's not a film that you would think is really vibrant to look at. It's quite clinical in its approach. It's quite black and white. It's very
straight, straight lines.
Yeah, exactly. I'd love to see that sort of in an animated environment. And I for one would love to read that graphic novel as well.
Hell yeah.
For me, everything he does is a passion project. There's nothing that I've seen of him goes, oh, his head wasn't in this. Like even Mank, that was a film that wasn't hugely lauded by people. But even that, you felt like Fincher was all over it. Every single thing he does, whether it's Mindhunter, whether passion. It's his older films, yes, it's always done with passion. And
absolutely.
To feel that sense of passion in a film that's so sort of clinical and black and white and muted, I think that speaks volumes to him.
100p.
He's a master. This is the second collaboration between David Fincher and Andrew Kevin Walker, following Seven in 1995. However, Walker did uncredited writing for Fincher's The Game in 1997 and Fight Club in 1999. Now, is this the fella that you brought up in our episode on Seven that wrote it? He was a video clerk, wasn't he? A video store clerk back in the day.
Yeah, he writes up epilogue montage, doesn't he?
Is that him? Okay.
I'm sure it's him. It's the one who created the intro to a film that most directors don't want him to do because his intro to films is better than most films.
I think there would be a lost in translation there. I'm talking about the guy that actually wrote Seven.
Oh,
he was a
sorry.
video clerk, wasn't he? I seem to remember.
Yes, sorry, you're right. He wrote the script.
Yeah, so this guy has
written
Seven.
Yes.
And now he's written
The Killer.
This.
Okay, I understand now. Sorry, yes, I was getting confused.
And he did some writing for The Game as well. Like, as successful as Fincher has been, it feels like more kudos needs to go to Andrew Kevin Walker. Because if he's spurting this content out and everyone associates it with Fincher, and rightfully so, because he makes masterful films, it's mad that this Andrew Kevin Walker fellow, to me anyway, isn't really spoken about a lot. Like, they're three huge hitting films.
Yeah, but writers, you know, they're never going to get as much credit as directors and stuff, especially because it's films. If that writer wanted to write himself a novel of Seven, if he could obtain the rights and he went and wrote a novel, he'd get all the kudos for it. But it's a script that only comes to life through all the other parties playing a part, isn't it?
So. It's so true. It's very rare you get someone like an Aaron Sorkin, who's a renowned writer, who then dips his toe in directing and shows, you know what, I can do this as well.
Make the step.
And so many, there's writer rooms where you get nameless amounts of people writing, working towards the same thing. And you can sometimes sense that if it's a TV series or a film, it sort of feels unbalanced if there's too many cooks spoiled a broth, right? So when it's a lot of people writing towards the same goal, sometimes it does feel convoluted. I just love the idea that Fincher's got his go-to guy that he brings on. He read Seven way back when in the 90s and was like, I'm going to get this guy, he can write a good script. He's fucking twisted and I like that. I love that sort of tag team of darkness. Really enjoy that.
Yeah. Luckily this was contract killing and not malicious,
religious,
rapey, killy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
theologian.
Messed. Yeah. Dark despair.
God.
Depths of hell.
God killing.
Spacey.
Yes.
Murds. What did you like about The Killer?
Lots of things. The one that stood out instantly was that whole opening sequence. The voiceover, the setup, the waiting, all accompanied by the Smiths, got me hooked. Paced to perfection, that whole opening sequence. I loved it. I could have listened. I'm not usually a fan of voiceover.
Yeah.
I think in some it's just used incorrectly. It can be used incorrectly. But in this, I could listen to the protagonist or what you call the unreliable narrator.
Yeah.
In Fassbender, talking about his craft and how he's got to this point in his life, because he's more towards the end of his career.
Yes.
You know, and he talks about how tiring it is, how long it takes to kill someone. And it's very cold and methodical. And when I first heard about the film and saw the poster, I thought, oh, he kills because he enjoys killing. But when the film started, I realised it is a job.
Yes.
It is his job.
And he's getting tired of it. He's getting too old for this shit, as Danny Glover would say.
Well, absolutely. And he lost his knack. Which is shown to you in the opening sequence of the film. He's prepared perfectly. He's done everything. But he thinks he has a clean shot. And then this extremely attractive S&M woman, or BDSM, whatever called, turns into the shot as he releases the pulls the trigger. And from that, the whole film just goes into this crazy survival film, essentially.
Yeah.
That opening sequence, I mean, I don't know if it's just when you hear something like the Smiths in a film at the start and it's loud and it's in your ear and you're watching the film through the crosshairs of a sniper rifle. It's just me. It's a bit of me.
Yeah, it grips you immediately.
Tasty.
Yeah, that's something that struck me as soon as the film started, and the first thing you pretty much see and hear is Fassbender narrating his methods as an assassin. There was a narration, I was like, I wonder what you would think of that. Because we've spoken about it before, and you're right, it's done to death. Mm-hmm. Especially that sort of neo-noir narration style. It's done so often that sometimes it's just a distraction. And we've spoken about it before, that Reminiscence film, the one with Hugh Jackman. That's the most recent example.
And Knock 'Em Stiff.
Yeah.
With Tom Holland and Rob Patterson.
Yes.
What was that called?
Devil All the Time.
Devil All the Time. Yeah. Bloody hell.
And I think, like you, I've almost got like narration fatigue. Like it sort of has to work to get me on board once I hear there's a narrator. But this one, like you say, it certainly ties the film together. You want to hear what he's got to say, because his occupation is alien to a lot of us. We don't understand like the method and how you would have to be so routine to be successful at that job. It's not one that you would necessarily be successful in if it was all improvised. Mm. So minutes in, I like you, I love that opening sequence. It's just, it reeks of Fincher, doesn't it? The quick cuts and edits, the song, like it's
pace,
so engrossing.
Pace.
And when the narration came in immediately, I almost wanted to pause the film and like be like, what did you think of that? But I'm glad I waited. And I'm glad we're on the same page there.
Well, it needs good dialogue to be good narration. It has to be. So him like showing little inklings into him as a person, like mentioning about how he ended up choosing his German tourist outfit as his camouflage. That's excellent insight into a character. You know, it reveals him, how he perceives life, or how people perceive German tourists.
Yeah, yeah.
So the narration has to pay off.
Yeah, I think as well, the narration has to be well written in terms of dialogue. Mm. And it also has to be, even though it's off screen, you don't see his mouth move as he's saying these. You're led to believe he's narrating it, or it's what's going on in his head. But it's also the deliverance of that. He manages to deliver it in a way where it's so robotic and almost inhuman, because he is kind of robotic. He's a sociopath. But you're never bored by it. In other films like that Hugh Jackman one we speak of, like within 10 minutes, I was bored of hearing his voice. I was like, and then I took a shit.
Yeah.
And then I had a can of Coke. And it's like, I don't care, mate. Just, you're ruining the film, because I don't want to keep hearing from you.
Everyone in the cinema, I think around about the 40-minute mark of Reminiscence, all started laughing when it kept coming back.
Yeah.
It was the jokiest of films I've ever seen.
And I think that's the biggest credit you can get when it comes to narration in a film, is that it's so well placed, it's interwoven in so seamlessly that you don't notice it, but you're always wanting to hear more. And I certainly felt that with.
Well, it's only when he's alone. Essentially, I would have to rewatch it again to give that a concrete thumbs up. It was only when he's alone, but it's when he's got time to think.
Yeah.
So it fits. It's cleverly inserted. And it's developing the visual scene for you, so you're seeing him progress towards his target whilst informing you of a little bit of who he is as a person and what it's like to wait for 24, 48 hours to pop someone with a gun.
It's not all guns and glory, is it? Mm. It's a lot of patience, a lot of sitting around, a lot of waiting.
Is that the mantra? A lot of patience, a lot of sitting around, a lot of waiting.
Yeah.
Get the fucking fat out of your ears.
It just sounds like being British, doesn't it? A lot of queuing, a lot of moaning, a lot of struggling, a lot of grey. What else did you like about the film?
I hate being British.
Okay.
I love the influences in this film. I think I've mentioned before, like, I love that he unashamedly admits, like, yeah, of course, these are my influences. And it's quite obvious. Like, there's a film, a 1967 film called Les Samurai, and the poster for it, It's the same sort of hat. It's not a bucket hat, but like the way the gun's being held, the way they're standing in the poster. But if anyone has an opportunity, go and watch the trailer for Les Samurai on YouTube, especially if you've seen this movie.
Yeah.
Because the similarities are just a homage. It's lovely. It's not stealing. It's none of that crap. And people getting on a bandwagon about Todd Phillips and stuff.
Yeah.
It's good to be influenced. That's how stories carry on.
Yeah, I think if you own it, like Finch has done in this one, like Tarantino does with all of these films, because he's a cinephile first and foremost, mm-hmm. obsessed with film. I think if you own it and someone goes, I think you've stolen this, and they turn around and go, no, yeah, I totally did. Yeah, I took massive inspiration from
it. It's not stealing.
No,
it's influence, isn't it? Otherwise, no one would progress anywhere. Like, imagine if religion couldn't adapt its text from the Dark Ages to now, they'd still be genociding and getting brothers to kill each other and murder their babies. It's got to change.
It's exactly that. It's the sincerest form of flattery, isn't it?
Mm.
If you're kind of, listen, in a world of remakes, continuous shit remakes, or turning Disney animations into real life
live films.
Yeah, like that is just downright plagiarism laziness. If you're taking something from a film you love and adding it to a new story, I think that's kind of cool. I would love to be in a position that I created something years ago and someone was like, I really loved what he did there. I'm going to use that as the foundations and put a spin on it or add a bit more to it. And I'm going to credit that person to say, I really liked what you did. Mm. Here's what I've taken from what you've done. I've put my spin and twist on it as well. I think that's flattering.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Any more likes for The Killer?
Yeah, lots. Another one that I was going on with the influences, I used to be a huge fan of the game franchise Hitman.
Mm.
And that outfit that he wears in the opening sequences of this, the German tourist, is very similar to the summer suave suit in Hitman. I don't know if you watched Hitman, played Hitman, but you'd have different outfits.
Years ago, but I didn't play it a lot. I played it. So
Hitman's wardrobe played a huge part in the game. Like disguises, how you played it, even the way he walks. Like there's so, I wouldn't be surprised if Fincher loves Hitman and plays it a lot.
Yeah,
I really wouldn't. I mean, it's I love the little. They look like Easter eggs for me watching this film. A lot of Easter eggs. Yeah, and it's a film dedicated to process, and I have a lot of time for that.
Me
meticulous
too.
Meticulous planning and organization. Yeah. It's a clean film. I saw one critic say it's a clean film, clean direction, and that's how it was intended, I think. To be good at what you do, not to be good.
Yeah.
And that's why I love it, because every little thing matters to him. Everything's smart and tidy, because he knows, like, I need to be able to leave this place knowing I've left nothing behind. So it's interesting to watch someone apply OCD to their job.
Yeah, and if you're going to be an assassin, OCD is going to help you.
Hell yee.
Because you're not going to leave any stone unturned. You're not going to leave tracks. You're going to be like, well, I have to do this. After I've done that, I've done that.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to do this. I've got to do this. He's got his methods and he sticks to them. And that's like one of my favorite things as well, is just how cold and clinical. But the calling it clean's amazing. That's exceptional. That's exactly what it is. The tone set in The Killer is absolutely spot on for me. It lacks emotion, vibrancy, and unnecessary violence. It focuses more on the robotic nature of this assassin who remains a consummate professional amidst an uncharacteristic error.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we mentioned it before, but the decision to have Fassbender's character narrate his meticulous mindset worked alongside this sort of cleanliness, clinicalness. He's talking you through his system, and the way he sort of delivers that, everything's so precise, so spot on. And it's one moment, when he makes that shot that he misses, you see a little twitch in his eye, and that's the first sort of signal. Everything else you've seen on him has been so, like, within the lines, so clean, so clinical.
I think
his little eye twitch, and then he misses, and then it just sets the rest of the film up.
I think I know why he misses, if you'll let me elaborate.
Yeah, please.
I think he misses because it reveals about 20 minutes after he misses, he's going back to the place which he calls home.
Mm.
And you find out just as the story progresses that there is a love interest in his life. There is someone that he cares about deeply. And he wasn't at the house, but she was, and she got targeted by other hitmen because he missed his target.
Yeah.
And I think he missed because, obviously, however long he's been with this woman, I'd say just by watching the movie and the way the brother-in-law talks to him, that they've been together maybe 2 years or a year and a half.
Yeah, they're established, right?
And he's trying to, I think it's affecting him, the love that he has for this woman. I think it's simmering him down to not be able to kill as well anymore. And, you know,
yeah,
he had a sniper rifle in his hands, and there's a really attractive woman dancing for this old, I don't know, oligarch in Paris. Yeah. And I think having a soft side revealed started to affect him as a hitman, as a sniper. You can't kill people day in, day out, and it not affect your life. So when you meet someone that you love and care about,
I think it's that he's got one eye on the prize.
Mm.
He's like, he's there, and he's like, you know yourself, if you've had a particularly tough week at work or tough period of work, you get to the point where, and you've got a holiday booked up or something to look forward to, you last couple of hours of your shift, you might be a bit complacent. You might give less of a fuck. It feels like that. We're led to believe that he's been in Paris on this assassination job for a good few days. He's getting tired. He's sleeping on a fucking table. He's getting a bit agitated. He's speaking to his contractor and he's saying, look, just let us know. Keep with it. Keep there. We've got to see this job through, sort of thing. And it just feels like it's someone that's coming to the end of his shift and he just wants it done. He wants to get home to his beautiful home, his beautiful woman. He wants to relax. It feels like that. And to be able to make the audience sort of relate to an assassin, because we've all been there in a working environment. Oh, fucking hell, I can't wait to finish work. Our work's doing my head in. Oh, but at least I've got a nice weekend planned, or I've got a holiday coming.
Sounds weird when you put it like that, though.
Yeah.
Imagine like you look at work like that, but there's a body twitching next to you. You're like, oh God, I ain't got time for this.
Yeah, fucking hell.
I ain't got time.
Oh, I've killed one person, but the bodyguard's clocked me. Now I've got to kill him. Oh, fuck's sake, there's people downstairs. I've got to go and murk them as well.
His journey home was so fun.
Yeah.
I was paranoid for him. Like when he thought someone's following him on a plane, so he stayed an extra night in one place. He had all these rules and rituals about how to get away with it.
Yeah. Superb.
I have one more, but it might confuse you a little.
Go.
I knew he would die. In the first 5 minutes, I knew it. And he didn't. Which is more non-Hollywood than Hollywood allows. And I love that. I love that he lived.
Okay, so you thought he would die and you love that he
didn't. In the first 5 minutes of this film, I was like, yeah, he's going to die. This is going to be like Leon. He's going to end under a hail of bullets.
I must admit, when it started fairly early on, I'm going to be like, he's going to break all his rules for someone that he cares for.
Yes.
He's got these killer commandments and he's going to stick by them. But then he's going to see someone he loves or respects, appreciates, and he's going to end up breaking his own set of rules.
And that would have cheapened the film, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would have been Leon.
If he changed his rules and he allowed emotion to get involved... We'll come to this in dislikes, but huge crowd of people misinterpreting the film as a revenge film. No, you're wrong.
No.
If he allowed all of that stuff to affect his professional job and allowed emotion to get involved, and he died in the end for love.
Yeah, that would have been such a pop out. Yeah, I would have been furious.
Read between the lines, bitch ears.
And in the film as well, like you almost see him as he stays strictly professional. He knows the job he has to do. He knows where he has to go to do it. He's figuring it out as he goes. He's showing us all his workings out and everything. But you see those moments where you almost see him considering breaking his rules. And at any point, I'm like, don't you fucking dare. Don't you break your rules, because I know I shouldn't be supporting you, but I'm kind of on your side.
Well, you're an unwell man as well.
Yeah, I mean...
The
only reason I'm not killing people for money is because I haven't found the right contract yet.
Exactly.
I am a freelance assassin.
I wish I could show the audience what you're like if it's 11:59 and you're not sitting down or you're at a place where you could sit down to eat your sandwiches.
I am being deadly serious when I say this. If a government or an organisation wanted a good killer, make me miss a meal.
Yes.
And I will take out anyone you want.
Yeah, so they put you in a cage. They wait for mealtime. And they go, right, we're 1 minute over. Adam starts to shake like The Thing. Palmer in The Thing. And then they just drop him into the place where he needs to pop someone.
The saddest thing is, I'm not talking starving me for like 2 days. I'm talking like, give me my lunch at 2:30 instead of 12. And you can put me in a war zone and I'll do some damage. It's a real problem.
Miserable bastard.
I'm working on it though.
Mm-hmm.
Shall I go on to my likes?
Yeah.
David Fincher.
Mm.
The definitive director of The Disturbed Psyche, the godfather of Grey Area. I love him.
I love him.
Killer sees him return to his brand of filmmaking. Now, I go against common consensus, I think. I really enjoyed Mank. It's not his usual
type
of film.
Big.
Yeah, but from the sort of public audiences, a lot of people slated it's too long, it's too boring.
It's about Mankiewicz, the guy who wrote Citizen Kane.
Yeah, and a lot of people was like, it's too gratifying to Hollywood. It's too a bit self-sucky to the industry and stuff. And I get all of those notes. I get it. But for me, it was still a film crafted from an absolute expert. And I enjoyed it. But saying that, I was happy to dive back into his delicious pool of darkness.
Mm.
No one does it better. Like, and for me, that's my sort of film. This is my sort of film.
Yep.
Looking at disturbed individuals, looking at the
thriller.
Darkness. I'll have it all day long. Mm-hmm. Love it. Absolutely love it. So for me, it ticked all the boxes. And when I heard this was coming out, I was like, I'm going to like this.
I know I'm going to like this.
Fincher's a huge like for me, but it's such a given I didn't say it.
Yeah.
There's just no point.
Well, I still wanted to say it. I want it to be obvious.
Assume I love Fincher, even Alien 3.
Yeah.
A film that has a very, very dark...
Even Benjamin Button?
Yeah, like Benjamin Button hits...
Social Network?
Hits a nerve. I've not seen Social Network because I despise all things Social Network.
Okay.
As much as I have tried to get sucked off on Social Network in terms of... Please like my music. Please follow me.
Let's say metaphorically. Not literally going on social media, sending dick pics.
To get sucked off.
Want some nom nom.
But yeah, I don't watch Social Network because I actually despise the person. Like Jesse Eisenberg plays, what's the name of the guy?
Zuckerberg. Yeah.
Why do I want to watch a film about that alien looking thing?
Yeah.
I know.
He's more alien than the thing in Alien.
But I'm
3.
Quite positive it'll be a brilliant film.
Yeah,
a very
course.
Enjoyable film.
Yeah, yeah. The other main... takeaway I took from the film is just the man himself, Michael Fassbender.
Amazing.
He gives a surprisingly chilling performance as this meticulous murderer who never deviates from his killing commandments. He gives this wonderfully muted performance where he really sort of subtly showcases a man who is starting to lose his touch. Mm. I'm sure you would have picked up on it as well, but the micro expressions, the stone cold persona, the soulless eyes, they all contribute towards Mr. Fassbender, making me want to spend more quality time with his killer assassin.
I've always loved the corner of Michael Fassbender's eyes. He gets these lovely little smile wrinkles or frown wrinkles. Even from when he was young, he's just got a very infectious smile. And when he does that, watch it again. When you watched him blink.
Are you complimenting crow's feet, bro?
Is it crow's feet?
Yeah.
Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
If crow's feet could get an Oscar, that man win.
So if they had eye range Oscars, you would have Colin Farrell's eyebrows, boom, in.
You've
Oscar.
Kahlua's tears.
Kahlua tear. You've got Fassbender crow feet.
Yep. You've got Richard Gere squint.
Yep.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. I like that.
Yeah.
There should be an Oscars just for the eyes.
Just for the eyes. I didn't call it just for the eyes.
Oscars.
Is there any blind actors? Who could present it? Stevie Wonder could present it.
But he can't see.
Yeah. But it's all about, you know, apart from being an excellent songwriter, the next affectation of him is he's blind. Oh no, affectation is saying you adopt to make yourself a character, like wearing bowling shoes. So it's not really fair to say Stevie Wonder chose to be blind.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bold take. I doubt it's true.
Do you think Fassbender would have been the most incredible Bond?
How about definitely yes?
If he would have picked up Bond at the time of Inglourious Basterds, at that age, that time in cinema,
yeah,
and done a Timothy Dalton 2, just two Bond movies, fuck Craig off.
Lie me on my side and milk all of my teats.
Oh, shit. He would have been the most incredible Bond.
Undoubtedly. And imagine him put in this cold, clinical style to his Bond.
Yep.
Not this like smouldering, I just want to get some wetty wherever I go. He's like, I'm just dirt killer. That I'm on my missions for Her Majesty.
Mm.
Rest in peace.
His Majesty.
Big Liz. But
their Majesty.
Yeah. Yeah. Just I would love to see him as Bond. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. What didn't you like about the killer?
What?
The killer? Is there anything you didn't like?
It seems like a miserable life, devoid of joy. But then again, I don't know, whatever relationship he has going on before the film starts must be the happy side of his life, and we just don't see it.
Yeah, we all got a miserable side of life called work. Most of us fucking hate it.
When you put it like that, yeah, I know, but it's like there's got to be a payoff. So I hate my job.
Yeah.
I used to put up with it because I knew in 2 or 3 months I'd be in Spain, walking the Camino, or I knew I'd go to New Zealand, or I'd be doing this new adventure. So, and there was a payoff.
Excitement around the corner.
But I suppose in this you do see his payoff. It is the most beautiful house looking out on an ocean.
Mm.
And, you know.
Away from people.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's just, it seems very sad, lonely, depressing life.
It does.
Imagine, you know, when you get on a plane, let's say it's, even if it's for work, there's a part of you, it's like, oh, you know, it's going to be cool. Get to see New York City. I'm going to wind down. Then I'll video chat my wife when I get home or when I get there, etc. With him, he's like, I'm getting on a plane to go and put .12 caliber bullet through someone's head.
Delicious.
That must be so grueling and depressing to do, mustn't it? And he doesn't ask questions. So he doesn't even base it on guilt.
He's stone cold pro.
Yeah. And I like that he's got one rule less than Leon. So Leon's is no women, no children, I think, isn't it?
And he's is I will kill women and children if I want, if I need to.
Well, I think he doesn't mention kids because who wants, no one's put out a contract on a 7-year-old. Like, what's that kid doing?
I don't know, man.
Running some of the biggest gangs in El Salvador.
I've got a little posse of miners that hang around where I live and they boot footballs up against the walls.
Admitting that you've got a little gang of street runners?
There's a little gang of children that play outside.
Posse of mine.
Posse of miners that I...
Oh, miners.
I mean, listen, if I had Fassbender's contacts... If I had Fassbender's character's number and had the money, I can't say I wouldn't pay him to kill some children.
Oh, my God.
I can't... I'm not saying I would, but I'm saying I can't say I wouldn't.
That's like a politician answering a question with a question.
Yeah, it is.
Yes.
Any more dislikes for me?
Stop asking me that. Phone graphics on the screen, meh. I don't care much for it. I know Fincher's always wanted to put realistic things that are current of the time to give a film realism.
Yeah.
But for me, I don't need to see phone graphics on the screen showing me that he's ordering tape from Amazon. I'll assume that he's a good enough hitman to obtain the tools necessary to take someone out. I don't need to see that you've gone on Uber. Don't need to see you've been on Amazon. Don't like it. I don't want to be reminded that I live in this world.
All right.
That's one. The third dislike, this one, got me raging. People's negative reaction to it is mind-boggling. I'm not saying it's a 10, but what I am saying is everyone's saying, oh, it turned out to just be a cheap revenge film. You're not watching it properly. You're not. And that's arrogant to say.
Can you do me a favour?
Yeah.
Can you go and get it?
Go and get what?
Go and get it.
I'm going to go right now.
Go and get it.
Right now.
Fucking tell him.
Shall I tell you why it's not a revenge
film?
Go on. I'll tell you why. So when he gets back to his house and realizes that hitmen have come to his house because he didn't fulfill his contract, right? And he finds out that his girlfriend of the time has been beaten, almost died. Her brother-in-law talks to Fassbender in the hospital, and Fassbender just says this will never happen again because he knows now he has to get out of the business. Otherwise, he'll be running for the rest of his life.
Yep.
The reason it's not a revenge film is because he never lets emotion get in the way of the next 3 or 4 kills. And the next 3 or 4 kills, who's he killing? He's killing the only people who know where he lives and know his name. The one guy, if it was a revenge film, he would have killed the main guy at the end, Arliss Howard, as the client Claiborne. He didn't. Why didn't he kill him? Because he's the only person who didn't know where he lived.
Yeah.
He had to kill the cab driver, the young lad, in Puerto Rico, wherever he is, Costa Rica.
Yeah, exactly. He's tying off all loose ends.
Because he knew where he lived.
Yeah.
He knew where he lived. So all he's doing is he's like, I now need to settle for a second life. I need to get out of this. The only way I can do it. And that's why he says to his brother-in-law, it'll never happen again.
Yeah.
She's been hurt. I can't do this. I need to get rid of everyone that knows where I live. Yeah. And everyone he kills knows where he lives. Everyone. Even the lovely secretary. That was a great scene, wasn't it?
That's the thing as
great
well.
Great scene.
Yes. That's the thing as well. If it was just revenge... I mean, I don't think it was revenge because I feel if he went to his home and saw that there'd been traces of people in there and he sniffed that people were hunting him, he would have taken the same path. He'd be like, right, they've tried to get me at my home here. And he would have gone and embarked on exactly the same thing, killing the people who know where he is. He would go back. It wouldn't be vengeance then. The only reason vengeance is thrown in is because his partner had got beaten up.
Hmm.
The result would have been the same. Imagine he didn't even have a partner. And if he saw someone broke into his home to try and get to him, he would then realise, okay, well, I'm not safe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to spend my life on the run. I'm going to nip this in the bud now and I'm going to wipe it out because I am a consummate professional.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's all it was.
Yeah. He has to kill the people that know his identity as a hitman. That's all he done. Not revenge. Otherwise, he would have shown emotion. He would have strangled them out and looked them in the eyes while he did it.
Yeah.
He would have slit their pupils so the black cried tear black off the face.
Like a proper killer.
He didn't. He was like, I've got to do my job for the last time. It's to get out of this life.
Exactly.
That was it. And it's just the way some people didn't give it a good fair run for its money. They just went, oh, it just turned it into a cheap revenge film. It weren't a revenge film.
For me, I can kind of forgive the people that say it was a boring revenge film. That's how they've taken it. Fine. For the one that I take a grievance against is the people that say boring.
2-3 out of 10.
Yeah. There was like nothing happened. It was boring. Mm-hmm. I'm like, are you ridiculous? Like you've watched a professional losing his edge and deal with that and tying up the loose ends. Mm-hmm. Like it's not it's not a Kill Bill assassin film where you're just going to kill, like a computer game, whoever's in front of you. Mm-hmm. It's targeted people that he's after, and he's only after those people. Like, even when he's carrying out jobs, he tries to avoid killing passers-by because they're not who he's there for. But if they get in the way, collateral damage, they're going to get killed.
I saw someone give Ant-Man Quantumania 8 out of 10 and gave this like 2 out of 10. I was like, what world are you from?
Well, they should relocate to a bin.
Fair enough if you don't like Hitman films, but you know that going in. And if Fincher's in it and Fassbender's in it and it's well-paced and it's got a really cold, calculating performance in it, how could you ever be so cheap towards it?
It's objectively the better film.
Mm.
I can't believe, like, for someone to rate this lower than Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, which I have seen, is absolutely ridiculous.
And you don't get films like this 6 times a year, like you would with, say, superhero films or rom-coms, etc. These come along a lot, few and far between.
Yeah.
Mm.
Any more dislikes?
No.
Okay. I've got a few. Yeah. And again, with a film like this, I'm nitpicking and I'm looking for them.
Yeah, you are.
So top of the list, Too Little Tilda. I'm a huge Swinton supporter, and considering she was labelled as the expert, I feel we didn't see enough of her. I would have loved to have seen her in action as an assassin. She has this sort of similar cold, clinical quality to Fassbender's character, and I'd have liked to have seen a bit more of her.
I liked it because you couldn't put a face to the people he was chasing for the good first act of the film.
Yeah.
So when you actually do, and when someone explains that she looks like a Q-tip.
She does.
I thought that was great. But in his voiceover, his narration, he's like, she does look like a Q-tip.
Yeah.
And it's the cab driver who told him, and he's popped that cab driver.
Yeah.
I liked that she was like, what's like them animals that disguise themselves and then pounce, like octopus.
Yeah.
Underwater, like just camouflage and then gets a shark. Yeah. Because the whole time she's almost like begging for her life in front of Fassbender in this restaurant where he's decided to get her in the public and just sit and talk to her. And she knows she tries her best to get out of it. And do you know what's amazing? When he just pops her in the head on the steps, a knife falls out her hand.
Yeah.
Love it.
He's sticking to his own rules.
Mm-hmm. But I respect your dislikes. Sorry, I just wanted to jump
no,
on.
No, that's fair enough. And I just think I really like Tilda Swinton. So I'd love to see her in a world like this where she gets to be more of an expert assassin. I just like to see a bit more of it, basically.
Yeah.
The other thing I didn't like was the hints of humanity. Now, I say this as someone who lapped up every single second of The Killer. And it's one of those wonderful films that I welcomed multiple viewings of before recording this episode. But there are moments within the film where the killer shows that he is at least contemplating kindness or at least consideration. I do understand that this is a direct result of him slightly losing his edge and suffering a wobble of confidence. But I just wanted him to remain a dead-eyed deaf dog all the way through. And I understand films have to have layers, and it would be pretty short film if he just went, right, I'm going to go and get these people. And it was all paint by numbers, they get their comeuppance. He does what needs to do so he can continue living his life. I understand all of that. But I was so enjoying this sort of cold sociopathic turn that I was just like,
He's not a sociopath, though, is he? Like, he had to kill a young taxi driver, not because of any other reason other than he knows where he lives, and he had to kill the secretary of his boss, and he did, and the little favour he does for her, he's kill her in her house so they get the insurance.
Yeah, but that's what I mean.
And he breaks her neck.
Yeah.
He pushes her, but you hear a crack and then she falls.
He quickly snaps her neck.
I like that, though, because he's like a samurai.
Yeah.
There is a bit of honour there.
But that's what I didn't want the honour.
Yeah, but he's not a serial killer.
But he is a sociopath.
But
because remember when he's like talking through his mantra, he's like, I don't give a fuck. Boom. Mm. When he's done that, I'm like, yeah, I don't give a fuck. Yeah, fucking kill everyone. Fucking do it. Go get it.
You're ill. And then
I probably am. But then he shows a bit of compassion. He's like, oh, you're going to leave him so our kids can find it so you can get the insurance
money. If anyone did that voice in this, I would be hunting down for Oscar. I would be like, someone's got to give this film an Oscar. Oh, you upset.
Oh, I got to go and kill the person because you went to kill my wife in my lovely home, Dominican Republic. Yeah, no, it's just, again, it ties into my final dislike. Again, he just broke his own rules. Mm-hmm. As a robotic man who can't help but live his life to a set of strict rules and regulations that I imposed on thyself, I didn't like that he broke his own rules and regs.
Did you just go old English?
I don't. He broke his own
rules
and regs.
Did he break his own rules and regs?
Again,
did he?
I know this is a case of his world turning upside down after an accidental assassination fuck up. But like my previous point, I wanted him to remain an absolute arsehole assassin from minute one to minute end. The last guy had no right to remain.
But that guy didn't know where he lived.
But still, if this guy has got that much money, that much pull, that much power, letting him live is leaving a potential loose end. You kill him, it stops. I just think the murder of him would have tied up any loose ends.
Yeah, but the prologue, he's killing someone for money.
Yeah.
Right? The whole rest of the film, he's killing them for necessity. He doesn't enjoy killing.
No,
you can't. If you're a contract killer, you can't enjoy it.
No, all emotions out of it. And you're right.
Well, in real world, in realistic world, hitmen like in like war-torn drug cartels and like mafia, most of them probably do enjoy killing.
Yeah.
You have to be an element of you that's so rotten to the core that you can kill someone in the street, no questions asked.
Of course. Now, and I understand that last one, they don't know where he lives. This guy doesn't even know who he was. It wasn't personal. Whereas the other ones were being people that were set out to kill Fassbender's character were doing a job and probably wouldn't stop until that job was done. But equally, even at the end, the last shot you see is Fassbender sitting on a sun lounger with his missus and his eye twitches again. And for me, I read that like he's having doubts. First time we see his eye twitch is when he misses the shot. You see it a few times in the film where he contemplates being showing some level of humanity and considering maybe I will let this person go. Maybe I will let this cabbie live. And then he sort of remembers his rules and like, no, stick to my rules. That little twitch at the end makes me think, probably should have popped that guy in case.
But that guy is a multi-billionaire business mogul. If he kills him, there's all sorts of security services looking for the killer.
That is true. Like he says in the film, like the bigger your wallet, the more of a shit the authorities give. And you're totally right. But equally, if that multi-billionaire was so inclined, he could put so much money into finding Fassbender.
But that's the whole idea. The only way he got Fassbender in the beginning was through that chain of command, which Fassbender then wipes out.
Yeah. Interesting little conversation.
I
wanted him to be just stone cold death dog.
Do you know the brain is surrounded by a fluid that smells of fish? So if you blow someone's brains out near you, you can smell fish.
Basingstoke Fish Market.
Yes.
Is that true?
That's true. It's a clear liquid. So if you ever see a head wound and clear liquid's coming out, that guy is 2 years old again all of a sudden. He'll be fucked for the rest of his life, but it smells of fish.
So if you blew my head off right now.
Well, yeah, if I shot you in the head,
it'd smell like hot fish pie.
Yeah, and iron mixed with blood.
Really?
Yeah. Did you just heave?
Yeah, I did a bit. Yeah. I don't mind fish.
I read that in a mobster book and it really fucked with me for years because I thought...
Cod cranium. Cod cranium. A hot cod brain sounds disgusting.
Four haddock.
Floor fish makes it so much worse, doesn't it? Heady floor fish. What?
And heady. Yeah, so... Imagine that.
Haddock, cod cranium.
Imagine popping someone in a hit and fish hits the deck. Smell of fish.
You learn something new every day, don't you?
That's why if you're inclined and you can do it, empty your bowels every morning before you go out of the house. Because if you got assassinated, you could shit your pants.
If I'm getting assassinated, I want to shit my pants.
Why?
Mate, clear up. Clear up on aisle three. I want it to be dirty. I don't know why. This is just coming out of my mouth. But yeah, if someone shoots me, I want to shit myself. Because I spend all my life trying not to shit myself in public. So if I get shot dead, I want to be free to shit myself. To empty thy bowels.
If someone shoots me, I want to shit myself.
I do. I want my head to smell of fish and I want my bum to smell of poo. I said it, I meant it. We move. I've got some questions. Which director would you like to see direct an assassin film?
Jane Campion.
Oh, hello.
Mm.
Power of the Dog.
And the Piano.
Mm.
She's so good. And she deals with quiet very well.
Would you like to see her direct a female-led assassin film?
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
I'd like to see an assassin film set in the future, maybe.
Oh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in the future, like a proper Blade Runner one.
Okay, so a futuristic campion assassin film.
Oh yeah,
because I'd watch that.
Imagine the weapons. Imagine the way to deal with, and the security defenses would be so different. You'd have to be a good hacker.
And they would probably come have found a way in the future that your brains wouldn't smell of fish.
Yes, so you could. So if you couldn't walk in a room and go, someone's had their head shot.
Yeah, you'd be like, I actually smell nothing.
Didn't go to the toilet this morning.
Yeah. Because in the future, you clear your bowels and your head fish every day by default. My choices would be Wes Anderson. Mm. Imagine a Mads assassin film with his aesthetic and setup.
Well, wouldn't
it'd be
it
a
be,
bit quirky?
Wouldn't it be a 2D shooter?
Yeah, it would.
It would, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It would be a 2D platform game.
Yeah, it'd be Terminator 2 on the Sega Mega Drive.
That's the one.
All right, so no, I wouldn't choose Wes Anderson. The other answer would be the Safdie brothers. That anxiety. Imagine that anxiety film with an assassin trying to run away.
They do brilliant at
that. Oh, I'd love to see that. In an assassin off between Fassbender from The Killer and Cruz from Collateral, who do you think would win and why?
Oh, God. That's one of my favourite anti-heroes ever.
Yeah, it is.
Collateral.
It is.
I think Tom Cruise is better at adapting very quickly to a situation.
Okay.
Like, you see the way he handles the punks in the street. He realises they've seen too much and he has to kill them really quickly. And he doesn't even think, doesn't hesitate. Fassbender has to wait a long time to make his kills. I don't know. I feel like I'm going to go Collateral.
Okay.
I'm going to go Collateral. I'm not saying it's better in any other way. I'm just saying. I think that guy is a much more colder killer.
See, I think Fassbender. Because Cruise is assassin. He's got five jobs to do on one night. He's getting a taxi driver involved. He's sort of more expressive.
But do you remember the backstory of Cruise's character?
Yeah.
Ruffalo references in the film that there was a really strange night where this cab driver had driven around town, killed five people, and then blew his brains out near the airport.
Yeah.
Cruise had done it before.
Yeah.
Cold.
I don't know.
Getting into that car that he will kill that cab driver no matter what.
Yeah.
It has to happen. So they're similar, actually.
I don't know. I think Fassbender pips it. I don't know if that's just purely because it's more recent in my memory. I haven't seen Collateral in a couple of years.
But you're talking about Fassbender pre The Killer because he's losing his touch, whereas in Collateral, Cruise is so cold.
Oh, you are right. Cruise is at the peak of his powers.
Peak.
Fassbender's starting to wobble a little bit. Yeah. So maybe you're right.
Mm.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to yield. I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to stand back.
Could we do it so it was Fassbender and Cruise both trying to kill Pinkett Smith?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because that egg is definitely going to smell of fish.
And I would love to see that egg hatch.
Oh.
Fishy goodness.
Cream egg.
Egg Benedict
Arnold.
With salmon.
Humpty Dumpty.
Sat on a fish.
And slipped off the wall. Pinkett Smith.
Oh, hello. I like that. Final question. A world-class assassin has been tasked with taking you out. They know where you live, your usual routine, and the location of your comrades and confidants. If you escape their assassin attempt for 48 hours, you are allowed to live. How do you do it?
Where am I?
Here.
I'm here, right here, right now.
You're right here. You get a call, anonymous caller. Someone's coming to kill you.
I have two theories. This being England, I don't think they'd have a gun, but you tell me. Are they armed with a gun or a knife or what's my game?
They're just top, they are peak performance assassins.
Are they here now? Are they coming now? Do I have time to move?
The person's phoned you and you said, we have got intelligence.
Mm.
There is the world's best assassin and they are after you.
Okay.
They are approximately 4 hours from your location.
Oh, amazing. 4 hours, no issue. I'd get my hiking bag, my hunting knife, my air rifle, even though it wouldn't do much, right? And I'd shoot
him in the knee.
Get right up onto the North Downs, get out into that bush, get into one of them World War II pill boxes, and I'd just alternate between them pill boxes for 48 hours. I'd only move at night. Do they have like heat-seeking shit and stuff?
All we know about these dogs are that they are very good.
They couldn't track me to the North Downs. They'd get here, like, I don't work on the North Downs. I don't work in the woods. They know where I work. They know potentially the cafe I might go to. They might know the pubs that I frequent. They don't know that I'd randomly just go out on the North Downs. Do you know why? Because I don't know when I'm going to do it. And I just do.
There we go.
There's no routine in the woods.
There we go.
No routine.
There is no routine in the woods.
There ain't. There ain't.
It's oddly beautiful. What would you rate The Killer out of 10?
I give The Dog 8.
Oh,
I really enjoyed it, man.
Okay.
It's my sort of film. I can understand why some people might say 6. It weren't really for me. It was quiet. It was slow and stuff. But some people give it 2s. I'm like, well, who are you? Who hurt you?
Yeah.
2?
Yeah.
2?
I mean, I thought you would actually go higher than 8.
Oh, really?
I went higher than 8.
Oh, wow.
I went 8.5.
Well, not far off.
Not far off. Mm. No, but I've watched it 3 times.
Mm.
And each time I was like, you know what? I could, if I had to go and watch it again tonight, I'd happily do it.
It's,
I
just,
there's
it's
a
enjoyment.
Lot there. There's a lot there that you can sort of, like I said earlier, those micro-expressionisms, all those little things, the little things he does on camera like, that sort of suggest that he's having a wobble. And yeah, for me, it just works.
We enjoy anti-heroes, though, and cynics and and down-and-outs anti-heroes, don't we?
We're quite dark people.
Some people don't. Some people really struggle with following a character that's flawed.
Yeah,
I don't.
But for me, especially when we live in a world where I'd say 90%+ of the shit that's released on streaming services is utter hot shit.
Mm-hmm.
If this was straight to Netflix, and I just thought it was great compared to what they usually churn out. So that gives The Killer a total score of 16.5 out of 20.
Mm.
If you like your assassin soulless, stone cold and sociopathic, or if you have ever wanted to see Michael Fassbender make amends for a murder mishap, then The Killer could be a film for you. The Killer is available to stream on Netflix. Consider watching this one if you enjoyed Leon, Collateral and The Matador. Should we play a game?
Si, senor.
Give it a name, give it a name, give it a name now. We birth a plot and then make a trailer. What the plot?
Action!
Okay, dear listener and dear Harry, you got to bear with me still. I'm new to this What the Plot birthing ideas game.
Get over it.
So I'm not as disciplined as you are. So this one is a bit lengthy, but the more I do, the shorter they get. That's my hope anyway.
I think you're being a bit generous, okay?
All right.
I weren't good at it.
Hey, don't you dare diss Dad in front of me.
All right, mate.
All right. Death has finally reached the age of retirement.
Mm.
After working tirelessly for the whole of humanity's existence so far, he has been given the clear to retire by his bosses.
Mm.
During his last 2 weeks, he has to train his replacement. Her name is Demise, and she is eager to put a more positive spin on the position. This is a big problem for Death. Demise wants to give the people she collects more time to accept their fate, say their goodbyes, etc. This goes against everything Death has done in his profession. The job means they have to be clinical, unbiased, efficient, and most importantly, punctual. Everyone has their time. It is not their job to ask questions or offer flexibility. If Death can't get Demise to adhere to the non-negotiable rules of picking up and delivering the dead by a set time, regardless of an individual circumstance, Death will not be able to retire. All Death wants is to retire, aka die himself.
Oh, Jesus.
But after spending time with Demise, he starts to buy into her way of thinking and questions the rules and regulations that he has been so fiercely loyal to.
Lord.
Now, as the parent of this plot idea, I know that's a lot. I don't know if it would be helpful to say that in my head, I see it as like this weird, possibly animated style type of film, potentially in the guise of like an American Gods, where it's all about mythology. And when I say Death, I have him as the stereotypical black hood, scythe, skeletal hands. But you might see Death be completely different. That's all up to you.
What happens if he retires?
He dies. He
is Death.
Yeah.
So if he retires, do people stop dying?
No, he's just got a replacement.
And the replacement is?
Demise.
Demise.
And Demise is a female character who ordinarily the females are the fairer sex. Her outlook's a little bit softer than Death. Death never asked questions, the whys, the whats. He knows this person. He didn't get like caught up in whether it was just or fair.
Okay.
So that's just how I see it. That's just the idea I had in my head. You do what you with it.
Well, when you said Death, the person that came to mind as the person playing Death is Michael Stuhlbarg.
Oh, man.
From
Boardwalk. Yeah, what
and,
else is
and it? He's in Lincoln.
Serious Man. He's yeah, been in loads.
Serious Man. That's the Coen Brothers film, isn't yeah. it? Yeah, I like him. But I think he, that sort of malevolent character that he plays in Boardwalk, about, you know, the speech that he does about fitting a cue ball in a guy's mouth, he bet, but he knew that the white ball was like an inch bigger or something. So he knew once he put it in his mouth, he couldn't get out. So he's quite sinister. But death isn't sinister. It's not devil we're talking about here. But I still think he played death quite well.
Yeah. I mean, in the way I've portrayed death here, he's almost like the Michael Fassbender's character. He's just got a job. He does it. He doesn't ask questions. I think, is it Stolberg or Stolberg?
I don't know.
Well, Michael
Stuhlbarg.
Yeah, that dude. I think that's great
Stuhlbarg.
Casting. And he's not often a lead. And I guess this would be a film where he shares the lead with whoever Demise is. But I really like that, yeah.
I see Demise as, do you know Dale Dickey? She plays the crackhead in almost everything she's been in. She's a really haggard sort of looking witch woman. So she was in Palm Springs. She was the drunk in the bar. She was in Breaking Bad. You remember when they break into the crack house and she drops the ATM on her husband's head and splits it open?
Vaguely.
She looks very haggard, like a witch. She's a great, great actor.
Okay,
but
so
she plays a lot of supporting roles, but I think I'm looking at physically what people look like for the roles.
Okay, so, but that's interesting because she could look quite haggard and sort of troublesome, but she actually plays a sort of warmer character than Death. So that'd be interesting because it speaks to like how first impressions can be wrong. So she could look, her name's Demise, and you think Death and Demise, she could look quite intimidating, but she's actually quite well-intentioned and a sweet soul, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think she could do both.
I'm going to have to look at a picture of her because it's not ringing any bells. But
honestly, if you know they talk about typecasting, like Hugh Grant, rom-com, London.
Yeah.
If you want crackhead, it's her.
She's the
go
to.
I think that could be her step into something a bit bigger.
Okay, I like
She'd be
it.
Great in American Gods, yeah. I think, playing Pestilence. Okay. I don't know if that's a diss, but I think she would be exceptional in that.
I like where you're going.
I wasn't thinking animation
okay,
when
cool.
you first proposed it, like that's you were cool. talking about with American Gods.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted to, and this is only based on Hereditary, but I thought Ari Aster would do a good job.
All day, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Exciting yes. new voice in horror.
Yeah, if I knew who directed maybe a few of the episodes of American Gods, I might have gone with them, but I don't know if they've done any motion pictures or big films.
Yeah, I'm unsure. I'd have to look that up.
But that's the first thing I sneefed when you started talking about death and like you're looking at it on a not on a corporeal plane. It's in the skies.
Yeah.
Almost.
So would it be a horror or horror elements or more of a fantasy?
I think
merging.
It would be horrific, but not a horror.
Okay.
I think it would be unsettling that you see death in that sort of
occupation.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the killer retiring again, isn't it? It's you're seeing something come to an end.
Yeah. I like that.
Mm.
Cool.
I think I'd call it In the End.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Because a lot of people, you know, a lot of atheists think dying is the end. A lot of religious people think it's the beginning.
Mm.
Yeah, Gandalf thinks death is just a journey we all must take. I've probably misquoted that, but
I like the title In the End because it speaks of death in the end, and it also talks about death retiring in the end. Like even he gets to retire.
Yeah,
I like that.
Is he the first death to retire, or is he in a long line of deaths?
He's been at it since humanity began, so he's been the only death this far. But he's served his time.
Can we say thus far? Thus far.
He's been the only deaf. Mm-hmm. He's been the deaf dude. It's just been him.
So that's good because then that puts, that means the plot of the story is this huge, it's like when Alex Ferguson stepped down from Manchester United.
Yeah, who wants that role?
Dale Dickey might be in the seat for about 6 weeks and then be replaced because she's just not producing enough deaf.
Yeah.
You know.
I like that.
Yeah.
I think you've done a very good job there.
Yeah, I think Ari Aster direct, Michael Stuhlbarg as a deaf, tired, knackered, but very eloquent. And Dale Dickey replacing him, my old haggard crackhead actor. I think she's excellent. And I'd call it In the End.
I tried so hard and got so far.
For most people, life and the experience of life seem to be relative. But death is absolute. It takes the absoluteness of death to wake people up. My replacement will continue my diligence, deliver the damned, transport the true, and reap with an unbiased and unquestioned committance.
From the director of Midsommar, Hereditary, and Beau Is Afraid. In the End, coming soon.
It doesn't even matter.